First, President Biden announced earlier this week his decision to lift the ban on transgender people serving in the U.S. military.
And what I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform.
In 2017, then-President Trump tweeted that transgender people would be barred from military service. That tweet reversed the Obama-era policy that officially allowed openly transgender people to join the military for the first time and ended an official ban on transgender service members passed in the 1960s. Trump's ban was held up in the courts for a few years, then in 2019 allowed to go forward by the Supreme Court. In the intervening years, it effectively put on hold the lives of would-be service members. Our next guest has been following this story closely, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the Trump administration's transgender ban for the military and Biden's reversal of it? Are you a member of the military? What do you think about this? What did you think when President Trump had made that decision back in 2017? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Colonel Sherry Swakowski is a retired Army officer and the highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. She's an advisory council member for the Modern Military Association of America, an organization that advocates for equality for LGBT plus military personnel and veterans. And she's from Wisconsin. Colonel Swakowski, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me back. It's good to be with you.
Well, we've talked to you about the twists and turns of this story over the years. What was your reaction to President Biden announcing the end of this ban?
You know, I was very ecstatic is the word I will use for those people that are serving in uniform today. They've lived under such duress over the past four-year period of knowing that their commander-in-chief doesn't support them. So if you can imagine a civilian parallel working for an organization where you know that your boss doesn't support you, wouldn't do a lot for productivity and things like that. But these transgender service members weren't deterred by the tweets and the change in policy. They got up every morning and they put on their uniform and they laced up their boots and they went to their jobs and performed to the very best of their abilities like they have for their entire careers.
I've also read that some people not already in the service had hoped under the Obama era ruling to enter the military because of the ban that came along with the Trump administration while it was tied up in courts. A lot of people kind of put those plans on hold. What are your thoughts for them right now?
Well, very true. So there was a short window of about 30 or 45 days where transgender civilians could enlist, but that closed rather quickly. So this affords them another opportunity to join the military, serve the country as they wanted to do for so long. But more importantly, it allows the Department of Defense to take advantage of all of the talent that is out there.
You've shared your story with us on the show before. Can you remind us your own experience in the military and after?
Sure. Served as an infantry soldier my entire career. I was privileged to be with the Wisconsin National Guard for almost the entire time, and worked as a federal civil servant for 13 years with them before finally going on active duty in support of the organization. So, well, I knew that probably better than most that being transgender was disqualifying for service. I had to make decisions along the way that were in the best interest of not only the military, but also my family. So I deeply suppressed those feelings that I had for decades, experienced very infrequent interludes where I would go out and buy female clothing and wear them for an hour or two or maybe a day on a weekend. But as soon as Sunday night rolled around and realizing I'd have to go back to living up to other people's expectations on Monday morning, would end up purging everything I did. So started to transition just after retirement, finally shared my secret that I had known about since the age of about five with my wife, and made plans to proceed down that road to transition as a civilian. So I was able to do that. I was retired for about 18 months, got a job offer in Washington, D.C., accepted that at the Army's Force Management School at Fort Belvoir. That's when I really decided to put a date on the transition and start living authentically. Did that, was promptly fired from that job, with the silver lining being that it was hired into the Pentagon authentically just a few months later, and spent about 2.5 years at the Pentagon, and then I ended up my civilian career as the regional HR director for the Forest Service out in Denver.
Talking to Colonel Sherry Sokowski, retired Army officer, highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country, looking at President Biden's reversal of a ban on transgender service members in the U.S. military. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions about that decision at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Getting into the debate that led to this back and forth, Colonel Sokowski, the argument for the ban was along the lines of military cohesion, unit cohesion, military readiness, the concern that having transgender service members would somehow disrupt that. That, I understand, has been studied over the years. What do we know about that issue now?
Well, we know several things. Those arguments, and I'll go back to, you know, since inception of our military, every marginalized group has been tested to prove they belong. Just so happens that trans service members are the only group to be tested twice. So those arguments were made back in the 40s, even during World War II. We've had African Americans who have fought in support of the United States in every war that we've had. And it wasn't until 1948 when President Truman issued his desegregation order so that African Americans could fully integrate into the all the military units that were out there. 1948 was also the first time that women could serve and, by the way, be paid the same amount as their male counterparts. The gay and lesbian community had it a little different. They suffered for years under Don't Ask, Don't Tell from 93 to 2011, again, saying that, well, they're going to be bad for the organization. They're going to be subject to blackmail. And none of those arguments have ever really had any actual backing. There was a study done in 2012, I think it was the Palm Center, that indicated that open service by gay and lesbian and bisexual individuals had no effect. And even back as far as 1992, before Don't Ask, Don't Tell went into effect, there were some congressional studies done where even the military admitted that there was really no increased opportunity for blackmail because of someone's sexual orientation. And since those times, we've continued to make progress. We saw females earn their Ranger tabs in 2015. And the following year, we saw women as infantry officers, and they were joined by enlisted women in 2017. And there's currently hundreds of female infantry soldiers, and they're assigned to all brigade combat teams. Again, the arguments were that they were going to be have an adverse effect on unit readiness and cohesion. And in fact, they've done just the opposite.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jackie is with us in Appleton. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I would just like to say that having been a former military spouse and being the parent of a transgender child, I'm super incredibly elated that this is happening. I guess my biggest question would be, why is this even an issue anymore, right? And for those who do have particular reasons, what are those reasons? And how can we explain to individuals that this is essentially just discrimination?
Jackie, thanks for the call. Colonel Sokowski, what would you say to Jackie?
Yes, Jackie, very, very good question. You know, I'm real familiar with I spent a number of years up at the National Guard unit in Appleton, where you're located. So, you know, I guess I would say that, number one, I'm very disappointed that we've had to endure this twice. It's the only instance of discrimination that I found as a researcher where discrimination was in fact reinstituted after it had been erased. It's, I think, a stigma. There's a 2019 Quinnipiac University poll that shows 71% of the country is in favor of transgender people serving in the military. And a poll about the same time of service members where 67%, I believe it was, were also in favor of trans people serving openly. I'm a researcher. I did my doctoral dissertation on this subject, and some of the things that came out were really disturbing. But I think it does boil down to, as you said, Jackie, just basically discrimination. And how do you overcome discrimination? Well, you do that by telling your story and proving that you can do the job. And each of those transgender service members that are out there today in uniform are doing that each and every day.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to retired U.S. Army Colonel Sherry Sulkowski, highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. She's with us to talk about this week's decision from President Joe Biden's administration to allow transgender people to serve openly in the military. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions, and your questions, maybe even your own personal experience. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Colonel Sherry Sulkowski, Army veteran, highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country, and we're talking about President Biden lifting the Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the U.S. military. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your reactions to that decision? Do you have questions about it? Does it affect you or someone in your family? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Ryan is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Ryan, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Ryan?
So I did 4 years in the Army, and I deployed twice. And when I was over there, you realize that people's emotions run really high and their mental health's affected. What I worry about if they're letting transgender people in the military, if they're taking drugs as part of their therapy, and that's going to affect their mental health when they're overseas. And that's all I have to comment.
Ryan, thanks for the call. Concerns, Colonel Sulkowski, about the impact of taking a related medical treatment, hormones, and the costs. Also, the Trump administration had brought that up of that treatment for the military. What are your thoughts on that?
The drugs that are administered to transgender service members are, as you mentioned, hormones by and large. So really doesn't do anything to affect your mental stability. What it does, it helps you transition. It has some physical effects. And there are people in the military that are taking the very same hormones that are deployed overseas in combat zones, just like transgender service members. And they're allowed to take them without any effects, and it'll be no different for transgender service members. As far as cost concern, President Trump brought that up. I was talking hundreds of thousands of dollars per individual. The Department of Defense's own data has indicated that trans healthcare from 2016 through September of 2019 has amounted to $10 million. $7 million of that was for behavioral health visits, many of which were mandated by the military, whether the service member needed them or not. And the average trans healthcare per year is just over $3 million. So that's just a drop in the bucket, considering the military spends $75 million a year on erectile dysfunction drugs that really have no place in a combat zone either.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Cameron in Madison. Cameron, hi.
Hey, how you doing? First of all, I'd like to definitely thank you for your service. I served from 91 to 94. I try to not pick political sides or anything like that, but for this, I'm all for it. On the administrative perspective, maybe above my pay grade, but on an interpersonal level, I served with actually in basic training alone. There was a gentleman, and he had an alternative lifestyle, and because of the ridicule and shame that he received, he tried to commit suicide during basic training as a person. That broke my heart. So with this, I am all totally for it. If anyone from any background or anything, if they want to be part of the stitch of the blanket that protects this country, hell, I'm all for it 100%, totally.
Cameron, thanks a lot for that call. Colonel Sokowski.
Yeah, Cameron, thanks for your service. And you point out a very important fact that it isn't so much being diagnosed with gender dysphoria. It's the stigma, the ridicule, the discrimination that people, and not just trans people, but LGBT people, Black people, all kinds of different colored people experience, that drives them to those lengths. And it's extremely unfortunate.
Thanks for the call, Cameron. Cameron mentioned the abuse suffered by a fellow service member there, and we've seen for women in the military concerns about sexual assault. What kind of things, as whatever a new group is coming into the military, to make sure that it's not a hostile environment for them?
Well, very true. You know, the reversal of President Biden's executive order reversing the ban is really only the start place for trans military service members to ensure that they're going to be welcome forever. And that goes for women, for other minorities. But trans people, particularly those in uniform, live with a nightmare of politically based equality. And that's one that can be changed very quickly depending on who is in power. And for that very reason, transgender military service must be legislated and included in the next Equality Act. And that should also help to protect the other minorities in the military. There are existing issues with trans healthcare. Folks experiencing very extended wait times or waivers for treatment. It's as we talked before, it's very discriminatory. DOD must overcome the bias that remains in the system because some individuals, including medical professionals, personal views may not acknowledge the fact that trans people exist.
Talking to Colonel Sherry Sokowski of Wisconsin, looking at President Biden's decision to lift a Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the U.S. military. Let's go back to your calls now with Gregory, calling from the road in southern Wisconsin. Gregory, hi.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Gregory?
Yeah, I'm just tuning in on a drive here, and I hadn't actually heard about the lifting of the transgender ban until now. I think it's amazing. I don't really have too much experience. I haven't served, but my friend's girlfriend is trans, and she's really kind of the first person I've ever been able to like talk to about it. I didn't really understand that much about transgender concepts until then, and I think this would be a great learning experience for the country. And I mean, it'll take a long time, but I think it's really a good way to get people more aware of our differences and, more importantly, our similarities, you know. So
Gregory, thanks a lot for the call. Do you share Gregory's hopes that this will kind of increase visibility and understanding?
Well, I certainly do. You know, that's how you win people's hearts and change their minds, by being visible, by sharing your story, and for having people get to know you for who you are, and perhaps not someone who you pretended to be, or in my case, I masqueraded as for, you know, 5 decades.
Thanks for that call. Colonel Sokowski, I wonder, you know, people who were kind of on hold in their plans to join the military, if they were transgender, might be looking at this and thinking, okay, under the Trump administration, we had this ban. Biden administration takes off the ban. A future president could put it back in. What would you say to the person in that position trying to decide whether now's the time to enlist?
Oh, I would fully endorse them moving forward and enlisting. You know, the people that really understand them, the military, you know, the funny thing about this, or I shouldn't say funny, but the weird thing about this is that the military, the uniformed leaders, know and appreciate their transgender service members. My research showed that the people that worked with him on a day-to-day basis understood the value, they understood the capabilities and the talents that transgender service members possess. And it's just when you have the big umbrella of the civilian control of the military that has a different perspective, it really muddies the water. But the military is a great organization for a young person to consider, transgender or otherwise.
And in our last minute or so, you mentioned, of course, this is all being done by executive order. You're hoping to see something happen in Congress, something legislatively. Is there any serious movement within Congress to do that?
Yes, there is. There will be. Representative Speier, who sits on the House Armed Service Committee, is going to be introducing some legislation to enact this in law. So we don't have to worry about who is the civilian control of the military, which party, or what their individual perspectives may be down the road.
We'll leave it there for now. Colonel Sikorski, thanks for joining us again today.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Colonel Sherry Sikorski of Wisconsin is an Army veteran and the highest-ranking transgender veteran in the country. She talked to us today about President Biden's recent decision to lift the ban on transgender people serving openly in the U.S. military.